My book on oranges in Florida covers interesting figures and a history spanning about 500 years. Unfortunately, I couldn't cover everything. This episode is dedicated to a small slice of Florida orange history that I couldn't do justice to in my book, namely the Ocoee Massacre of November 2nd, 1920. Orange growing and labor has always been tied to the political landscape of the U.S. and Florida. The KKK often intervened throughout the history of orange growing, threatening black workers as far back as the 1870s, and in one case, even working with grove owners to block a burgeoning orange pickers union in Polk County during the Great Depression. But this story is about Ocoee. Ocoee is a city in Orange County, Florida. In 1920, one of the leaders of the black community there was a man named Mose Norman. He owned about 100 acres of citrus groves, and more importantly, he began controlling the black labor in the area. If you wanted something done, you went through him, and he negotiated conditions and wages that were fair. White community leaders and growers weren't happy about the situation, but they tolerated. Norman, though, he was doing more than just negotiating for labor. He and another black leader and landowner by the name of July Perry were working to get blacks registered to vote, even going so far as paying the poll tax for those who couldn't afford it. At the time, we were a one-party state. Democrats were the party of Southern whites, while Republicans were considered the party of racial equality. This was before the Lily White Republican movement in Florida. Democrats in power did everything they could to prevent African Americans from registering to vote. Failing that, 3 weeks before the presidential election of 1920, the local KKK warned the black community, in their words, that not a single Negro would be allowed to vote. Black voters at the time were harassed at the polls, even turned away. Mose Norman contacted Judge John Moses Cheney, a Republican running for the Florida State Senate, who had organized the statewide drive for black voter registration. The judge told him that interference with voting was illegal, and to get the names of the black folk who were denied their voting rights and the names of the white folks who were violating them. So, Mose Norman came back to the polls a second time. When he returned, a large group harassed him. Some accounts say that Norman brought a shotgun with him, while other accounts said that he left it in his car, only getting it when he felt threatened and overwhelmed by the group. In any case, the whites used his own shotgun to drive him away. Local whites had decided that enough was enough as far as they were concerned, so they hunted him. By sundown, a mob of over 100 was led by Colonel Sam Salisbury, a prominent white man who was a native New Yorker and a former chief of police of Orlando. The mob was told he'd been seen at July Perry's home, so they went there. And because no one answered the door, they broke it down. Perry fired gunshots from inside the home in self-defense, but by white accounts, there were several armed blacks inside, but Zora Neale Hurston wrote that Perry had defended his home alone. We do know that the leader of the mob, Sam Salisbury, got shot when he knocked the back door open, and two other whites, Elmer McDaniels and Leo Beauregard, were killed when they also tried to enter through the same door. Sam just got shot in the arm and survived. The white mob withdrew and called for reinforcements from Orlando, Apopka, and Orange County. During the 2 to 3 hour lull while the whites were recruiting, July Perry, who'd been injured, tried to flee with the help of his wife into a cane patch, but he was found in the light of dawn and was arrested. After Perry was treated at a hospital for his wounds, he was taken by a white mob while being transferred to jail. They lynched him. This wasn't enough for the mob, So they went back to the black community in North Ocoee and began burning the houses there. Blacks who fled the flames were shot as they ran. At least 20 buildings were burned, every African-American church, schoolhouse, and lodge room in the neighborhood. Some black residents did fight back, resulting in an evening-long gunfight. Eventually, black residents were driven into the nearby orange groves and swamps and forced to retreat until they were driven out of town. We don't know the exact number of black folks killed or hurt, and the estimate ranges from 50 to 100. We do know some of their names and what was done to them. Langmaid, an African-American carpenter, was beaten and castrated. Maggie Glenlack and her pregnant daughter burned to death while hiding in their home. Roosevelt Barton, hiding in July Perry's barn, was shot after the mob set fire to the barn and forced him to flee. Hattie Smith was visiting her pregnant sister-in-law in Ocoee when her sister-in-law's home was set on fire. She fled, but the rest of her family was killed while they hid. As for Mose Norman, as far as we know, he wasn't at the Perry house at the time of the attack, and was never found, in Florida at least. Perry's wife, Estelle Perry, and their daughter were wounded during the shooting at their home but survived. Authorities sent them to Tampa for treatment in order to, quote, avoid further disturbance. But Perry's body was put on display, riddled with bullets and swinging on a telephone post by the highway, left near a sign reading, quote, "This is what we do to niggers that vote." A local photographer sold photos of Perry's body for 25 cents each. Several stores placed the photo on exhibition by their windows. No one was prosecuted for his murder or any other that happened that night. The African-American residents of Southern Ocoee, while not direct victims of the actual massacre, were threatened later into leaving. Annie Hammeter, an African-American woman residing in Southern Ocoee, suspected that the massacre was planned so that whites could seize prosperous African-American properties for nothing. Every person of color that had lived there left town. When it came time to harvest the oranges, local growers employed white labor, and what's more, they claimed the oranges from the groves abandoned by the blacks who had left, including Mose Norman's grove. From the massacre through to about the 1970s, Ocoee was known as a sundown town, as in, if you were black and passing through, locals made sure to let you know that if you stayed after sundown, there'd be trouble. Ocoee remained an all-white town until 1981. In 2018, the City Commission issued a proclamation formally acknowledging that the massacre happened and declaring that Ocoee is no longer a sundown town. This is not exactly an uplifting piece of Florida orange history, but it is something that I think should be talked about. Thanks for joining me, and if you want to know more about the history of orange pickers in our state, buy my book from a local store or Amazon. It's called Florida Oranges, A Colorful History. Thanks for listening.